We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
I think for us, when you look at Evaldi's scenario, just due to circumstances, it's taken a little bit longer for him to come back than what we would have hoped, and he would have hoped. To get him back and pitch for us quicker is out of the bullpen. Originally, he stated when we signed him and over the winter time that he really didn't want to go into the bullpen, but he's changed that because he really wants to get back as quickly as he can. And really, I mean, for us, it strengthens our bullpen. It gives us some more depth out there. Some clubs tried to sign him as a bullpen guy. So he's in a different mindset. It doesn't preclude us from pitching him and still lengthening him out at some point if we want to do that, but it gets him back quicker for us and think it helps us.
That was Dave Dombrowski talking about the decision that when Nate Evaldi would return from the IL, he would be in the bullpen. That was early July. He's now back. You look at his situation now. He threw a rehab start Thursday down in Pawtucket. Joined the team to go to Baltimore. Saturday was activated because he wasn't going to go on back-to-back days. But he had thrown to live hitters of the Red Sox at Fenway on two previous occasions. You know, talking to Cora, that's... they viewed that as two other appearances. Right? He threw live BP to big league hitters. So that was two appearances, the third one being the rehab. Here's what I don't get. And we said this Friday going into the weekend. I fully expected Nathan Evaldi to throw Saturday in Baltimore. Thursday, rehab. Saturday in Baltimore. The off day for Sunday. Get him ready for Monday in Tampa. That day on Saturday, the Red Sox won 17-6. That could have served as I put it, funny because other people use the phrase, get his feet wet kind of game, right?
You said that yesterday.
It would be an additional rehab kind of start, 17-6, bring him in versus Baltimore because we got a tough stretch in Tampa and New York, and I don't want to have that kind of outing, you know, in Tampa. Work out the kick two in Tampa. Instead, he comes in there tonight, last night rather. Luckily, there was an 8-0 cushion. Luckily, because his control was off. Nate Evaldi is not a closer, per se. Like, he's not a strikeout guy. Okay, he goes 99. He's not a strikeout guy. He's a bad contact guy. But he needs to live on top of the zone. That's where the transition was for him in being successful. Throw the fastball on top of the zone. Ride that ladder a little bit. Get guys to chase. Cutter elevated in the zone. Not a cutter down and in. He elevates the cutter up to crowd guys. Last night he came in, everything was down, had no control whatsoever, couldn't locate up. He wasn't the same guy. So it was one performance. But after the game, you get this from Alex Cora.
Just got his feet wet as a reliever, you know, just one. And then that happens a lot, you know. I think, you know, the bouncing, breaking ball, and the splits, you know. If you ask Christian, he should have blocked those pitches. But besides that, now he got his feet wet, and we'll use him whenever he's, you know, the next time.
I just think he should have got his feet wet Saturday.
Okay.
What is it? He said he was going to pitch yesterday no matter what. Before the game. He's pitching today no matter what. What if it was 4-2? What if it was 2-1? You got lucky.
But that doesn't happen because they're never in games like that.
But you got lucky. It was 8-0. What if it was 8-5? And he comes in and gives up 5 hits and 3 runs.
Well, they would have lost.
Yes.
Thanks for that, Ryan.
First loss of
the year. Appreciate
it.
And yeah. By the way, I don't know if you saw his performance, but did you see some of those breaking balls he splits for pass balls? You going to put that on Vasquez? I mean, they weren't even close. The first slider he threw, I think everybody were watching over at NBC last night. I think everybody just yelled. They're like, whoa. I mean, it wasn't even close.
Ask Christian, so, he should have blocked those pitches.
So, okay, and you mentioned this yesterday, and I'm trying to think, is it really that big of a deal? Like whether he got it on Sunday or he got it on Monday, the fact is that he needed
reps. You're lucky though, right?
What do you mean? You got lucky that he... I would say it was more advantageous. He came into the game. He had an 8-0 lead.
Yeah, that's
where they're
lucky.
He had a low-leverage situation. And so what does it matter? All they're doing is trying to just trying to give him reps. So whether he's in a game where they're losing and they can't come back, or he's in a game where they have a cushion and you know you're going to win.
Well, do you think that he'll be sharper in game 2?
Sure.
Game 3?
Sure.
Hopefully be better. By game 3 or game 4, they're locked in. All right. Well,
so you're just you wish you would have been able to play a game earlier
Saturday. But, bring him in Saturday against Baltimore.
So he could have played
maybe
what, Sunday.
Yeah, so
and
maybe,
then you win that game where you
No. He goes Saturday.
You got shut out.
No, he goes Saturday. 17-6. He throws the 9th inning. Sunday's an off day. So now last night you want to throw him again. Maybe he looks a little bit sharper. So then on Wednesday.
So he's closer to being
when
ready.
You need.
Okay.
When you, because you need him, and I said before, you put a lot on this kid, a lot of expectations. He hasn't thrown since mid-April, and you're expecting him to jump right in and be a high-leverage guy. You're actually expecting him to jump right in and be who he was against the Dodgers in the World Series, and I don't think it's that easy. I think he needs outings.
Wait, so do you? No, I think everyone thinks he needs outings, and he needs
so why did you lost one? You lost one.
So okay,
on
so fine. So the issue is that he could have been ready and one
could've
game more ready against the Yankees.
So in other words,
or in a maybe in a different situation, maybe a game, maybe he's in a you put him in a better situation or tougher situation against the Rays in a game you have to.
So
win.
Given what you just saw on Monday,
I mean, I think you're nitpicking a little bit.
No, but I just think it was missed opportunity. I'm not like you know going crazy over. I just think it's missed opportunity because now he doesn't pitch tonight. So Wednesday, 4-2 in the 7th. Can you bring him in?
This guy, he's seen well as a reliever.
Why not?
I wouldn't. Not after what I just saw. He's all over the map.
You're going to lose.
So you're not going to put him into. You're not going to put him in a tough situation until he proves that he can deal with a low leverage situation, right? So the only you're not going to put him into a tough situation where the circumstances are at their worst for the Red Sox until you see him pitch his way out of at least one inning without no consequences whatsoever.
I don't know how you bring him in a one.
I don't think you have. I don't think you have a choice.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Unfortunately, but you got to treat him like in the minor leagues, you know, in the big leagues, it is like, you know, you don't pitch for 3 days and you might pitch 2 or 3 days in a row. In the minors, you got a guy like this and you're kind of grooming as a reliever. They're on a schedule. The game doesn't dictate how you use them. They're on a schedule. You want to use them every other day. So, you know, you're up 3-2.
You don't care if you win or lose.
Right. You're up 3-2. He comes in the game. You're down 9-4. 2 days later, he comes in the game. You're up 8-1. He comes in the game because you want to get him on a schedule. You want to get him throwing. That's where they are with Eovaldi. So they threw him last night. They got lucky. It was 8-0. They were lucky. Because if it was 4-2 and it was his day, I don't know how that they would have lost the game. Now Wednesday. I don't know how Wednesday's gonna be. Maybe they're down 16-4. Perfect. He lost the game, but hey, whatever. Give the Eovaldi an inning. Maybe you're up 2-1.
Oh, what about this? I know the wins are important.
I would bring him in up 2-1.
So let's say you win tonight, Sale's pitching tonight, you win tonight, Price is Wednesday. Okay? That's an early game. It's a 12:00 game. You know you're going to lose that game anyways, so what's the difference? You've already won 2 out of 3, so what? You put him in another situation, then he's ready for the Yankees. I don't know, I guess technically you could be critical of him. Well, I mean, nothing changes. He's just a game behind is all he is.
I wouldn't pitch him in a high-leverage spot right now. I just think it's too much. And I think you need to take every opportunity to try to ramp this guy up and get him ready as soon as possible, and they missed one on Saturday. So now he's an outing behind. So I don't know, maybe he's not good on Wednesday and he blows you a game. Maybe he's good on Friday against the Yankees and he's good.
Ooh, and maybe that's the difference between whether you make it to the playoffs or not.
But that good outing.
Because you mismanaged Nathan Eovaldi.
His good outing could have been on Wednesday.
See, here's the thing I'm joking about, but that could be the case. This whole second wild card playoff spot could come down to the wire where it is the difference between one game.
Mm-hmm.
Where now the decisions that you're making. So in April and May, you don't really question the decisions so much because there's so many games left to be played. So you don't really realize the ramifications of those decisions. Now, where you're really fighting for your life every single game and you're in 14 games in 14 days and you really need to catch up and gain some ground or distance yourself from other teams that are chasing you, this decision actually could prove to be a terrible one. I mean, I'm just saying, based on how difficult it is.
Listen, I think you'll be a good arm for you at some point. It's just that I think you got to take every opportunity you can to get him in games, and I would take opportunities. Unfortunately, you can't just go back-to-back. You gotta hope that 2 days from now is another good opportunity where you're up 5 or 6 runs to get him in a game, and you got to hope and then 2 days later it's another good opportunity to get him in a game before you put him in a high-leverage spot protecting a lead. The other move that I mentioned, trending. So Mitch Moreland was reinstated from the 10-day DL, and they sent Marco Hernandez down to Pawtucket, who I think is a good player. So now,
great defensively the other day, had a couple hits.
So now you got Moreland and you got Travis at first. I guess you could still say you got Chavis there and Brock Holt, though Chavis and Holt can play second. So now at least you got lefty-righty combinations there in both options. But it made me think of something that I haven't put my head around since I heard it. And I've been trying to figure out why. And last night it got me thinking more. And this move here kind of, I don't know, makes me think, go my mind go other places. But so last week, remember the report that the Red Sox are interested in Jose Abreu?
Yep.
I just sat there and said, what is this? Like, and I don't believe every report. But for a minute, let's believe that there really is interest. Why would there be? You know, he's got one. This is it. He's a rental. Is first base really the glaring need for this team? I mean, you expected Moreland. They got him back today. Moreland's back. He had Chavis. You know, Travis is hitting lefties. Why first base? Why would they ever be interested in first? And my only thought is, you know, when they saw, like, Mitch Moreland being reinstated, I think a lot of people felt like, well, listen, Chavis has got a little back issue. Maybe Chavis goes in the IL, and you got Moreland and Travis, right? There you go, and you keep Marco and Holt. And then I think, well, maybe they don't want to put Chavis on the IL 9-10 days before the trading deadline.
David Dombrowski.
Because it's hard to trade a guy who's on the IL. So maybe you activate, you keep him active. And he deals with his back for the next couple of days. And that's the only thing I can think of where Abreu makes any kind of sense. That Chavis is involved with others. Maybe it's three teams. Maybe it's Chavis is gone and prospects are gone and somehow Abreu and a reliever is in the house. I have no idea why they'd be interested in Jose Abreu. And to me, Chavis not going on the IL, I don't know, maybe it's just as simple as they think he can play second base. I don't know, maybe looking too much into it, but I'm still trying to figure out why they'd be interested in Jose Abreu.
Yeah, I would have no clue. Maybe you go back to, you know, you were mentioning the whole Castillo missing out on Abreu the first place, and overpaying for Castillo. Maybe it has something to do with that.
Because, I mean, Abreu's got a year, like this. He's a rental. So, I mean, it's not going to be huge prospects. You might look at Chavis and say it's too much to give up for Jose Abreu just for 2 months. And Chavis has shown some pop. He's shown some potential. I think he's come on the other side of this little slump. So that's too much to give up for Abreu. As stupid as that might sound to some, because it's only 2 months of Abreu and he's gone. He's not in the future here. But if it's too much to give up for Abreu, is it too much to give up for Abreu and a reliever? In some kind of three-way weird deal.
If taking Abreu gets you the reliever, then is that make sense to you?
Yeah.
Well, then,
if somehow Dave Dombrowski can pull off a reliever and Jose Abreu and say Abreu's our first baseman hitting fifth behind J.D. Martinez and we just picked up a reliever and we traded Chavis and prospects to get those two guys, then yeah, that would make a lot of sense. And it would make this team look a lot different as long as that reliever's quality. Let me go to Matt, who's in New York. Matt, go ahead.
Do you think the Red Sox would pick up Matt Harvey from the Angels?
No.
random. All right, listen, I know we're up against the break, but I was just looking at the comments that were made about the Yankees, about how they're savages.
Yes,
effing savages. And I mean, I don't know, maybe they are, but based on, you know, the Red Sox ability to hit, score runs, where they rank in Major League Baseball as far as their batting average, team batting average, the runs that they score. I mean, other than pitching, which isn't even that big of a discrepancy, they're just as dangerous as the New York Yankees. They're just as dangerous as the New York Yankees.
Yankees starting rotation is a 4-1-5. You got a 4-7-9. Going in the last
time. I had a 4-6-8 and a 4-0-1.
Their bullpen is lights out. They go 3-4 deep. You go 1.
Okay, so, and they still need a starting pitcher, though, right?
The Yankees?
Yes.
Yeah, to win the World Series?
Okay, to win the World Series.
Stroman,
there's rumors
probably
about them. Stroman was one of them. Syndergaard was a name from the Mets, but I doubt that's going to happen. But it just doesn't seem like the issue is if the Yankees are the favorite and you only have one small issue, okay, that you can potentially fix, then I would pump the brakes on the Yankees winning it all. That's me, just looking at it. Like, you can hit just as good as them. You have just as much, you're just as good as them defensively. Your starting pitching, if it actually eventually pitches it to their expectations. And I'm just talking about the two main guys, just Sale and Price. I'll even throw Rodriguez in there. If you just have those three guys and you end up manipulating your bullpen to help you just get through the rough part of the playoffs, then there's no reason why you can't be just as savage as them. That's my opinion. It's my opinion.
I just think that there's a bigger discrepancy. Their bullpen is so much better than yours.
Well, the Red Sox have given up 518 runs and the Yankees 428. That's the difference. That's the big discrepancy.
So much better than yours. Now, a guy just tweeted me. All right, it brings me back to this Chavis thing and why the Red Sox would ever be interested in Jose Abreu. I just find it weird. Maybe I'm overthinking this. I don't know. I wouldn't give up Chavis for Jose Abreu straight up. Alex Colomé's involved?
By the way, Lou, if Jose Abreu is acquired by the Red Sox, he would have the lowest on-base percentage of any of the eight normal starters.
He would.
He has a .311 on-base percentage.
Don't matter. Don't matter. He's a threat. He's got 22 bombs and 72 RBIs. Go look at those numbers. I'll take the .311. He don't walk. Fine. He hits bombs instead. Me no like walkie. Me like hitting homies.
He hit one off the Red Sox recently.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Chavis for Abreu? No. Chavis plus for Abreu and Colomé? Okay. Now we can talk. All right, let's talk after the break, shall we? All right, it's OMF, no Ordway, 617-779-7937. Are you trading Chavis? Yeah, it might be. We'll talk about it.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com. Take OMF with you wherever you go. Download the radio.com app. Now back to Ordway, Marloni, and Fourier on WEEI.
If there is that reliever out there that you're dying to acquire, we've mentioned a few of them. Guy Doolittle out in Washington, because he's got 2 years left. Will Smith's only got 1 year left. But a guy with like maybe 2 years. Listen, I would not take Chavis off the table.
This is interesting.
Yeah. And he just got...
Michael.
He just got named AL Rookie of the Month. Okay? And I'm not giving him up for crap. A month and a half in, I would wonder if he can hit a fastball.
High fastball.
You give me a good 95-mile-an-hour fastball or above, and I can't remember the last time I've seen him make contact on it.
Oh, that's right. He got exposed, right? They figured him out.
Turned it around, though. Figured it out, and that's good for the Red Sox.
That's a good sign, too.
To me, he's an asset. I can talk myself into this one.
Young kid, kind of gets exposed. They figure him out. He adjusts on the fly.
I can talk myself into this. Colomé, got a year and a half left this year and next year. Abreu for 2 months. Mookie, Devers, Bogarts, JD, Abreu, Benintendi, Vasquez. I can talk myself into that. Mullen pinch hitting off the bench where he's really good. I think I could do it. I'll get Hernandez back up here to play with Brock Holt. I think I could talk myself into this. I think I kind of like where this is headed. I kind of like it. I don't know. I got to be true to myself. I want to go to Paul in Westfield quick before we hear some comments from Buster Olney. Paul, go ahead.
Good evening, guys. How are you? Good afternoon. How are you?
What's up?
Christian Lou, I think there's something we're failing to recognize. This is the condition of Major League Baseball this year. If you look at the layout of the winning teams, the mediocre middle teams, there's three, the Angels, us, and the Rangers. Everyone else, like Toronto and all the other teams, they're really bad. And here's another odd quirk. Tampa Bay, for example, 19 games, the last 19 games they were winning in the seventh, and they lost 11 of them. Very similar to last year's NFL season. It was no clear-cut winner. So we're not only not out of it, Christian and Lou, you're 100% right. If our pitching staff comes alive, combined with our bats and our really good defense, we're just in the mix just as much as anybody.
Well, Paul, you know what? I would agree with you in two-thirds of that.
Which part are we not agreeing with?
Well, the rotation, I agree with. There's potential there. We know that. The lineup, we know they can hit.
As long as you have a four-run lead.
Even then,
I don't feel comfortable about
it. I still look at this bullpen and say they are who they are. You know, talent-wise, they are who they are. Is there more there? Is there more from these guys?
When it's all said and done, let's say they do make the playoffs, and your bullpen is this Barnes, Workman, and Evaldi.
Well, Evaldi's got to pick this thing up. They need one more run. They need one more run for me to take them serious.
Out of the current list of characters, who would be the next man up after Barnes, Workman, and Evaldi?
Well, honestly, for a while, it was Josh Taylor. And he's pitching good. But just like Marcus Walden, when you start to transition to some high leverage and things don't go well, you know, it's a lot different when you're in a game down 6-1. You know, when you throw the ball well, or you're down up 7-0, you give up one run, you still win the ball game. You know, but when you go out there and crap yourself in high leverage and your team loses, how does that affect a young kid? And we've seen it's not good. You know, the short-term memory, you know, big leagues, losing ball games. Asking these kids to put in high leverage spots, whether it is, you know, Colton Brewer, because he's throwing the ball good recently, but then he has a couple bad outings. Josh Taylor's throwing the ball good recently, but now all of a sudden we don't know what's going on with him. Walden was throwing the ball great in April. Hasn't thrown the ball great since, except for those last two outings.
See, if you made
now,
the playoffs.
Now, Darwin Hernandez will be the next guy, but don't forget, this is a guy that will walk five straight just to stay in shape.
I do believe that they believe that, you know, they're going to run this playoffs if they do make it, and I do think they will, like they did the postseason last year. Right? So they're going to shorten their bench, and you would really only have three guys starting. You'd have Price, you'd have Sale, and you'd have Erod. After that, you want to take Cashner, you want to do whatever, you want to put him in the bullpen, fine. Put Porcello, you're probably going to be a middle relief type of guy. That's what you're not going to start. And then we'll just start all over again. Then we're just going to work Barnes, we're going to work Workman, and then maybe based on situation, you have one of those younger kids out there. To me, that's the only way they get through this. That is the only way. Get to the playoffs, and I think they can navigate their way through it, personally.
Well, it's curious because a lot of people are wondering, Dave Dombrowski, it's not in his MO to kind of blow it up. He's here to win. This is Bob Nightingale and Buster Olney do a podcast. This is Bob Nightingale talking about Dave Dombrowski and his approach at the deadline.
I never would have imagined, Bob, at the beginning of the season, we'd be talking about even the possibility of a Red Sox sell-off. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, I still don't see it, Buster. Even if they have a lousy, you know, next, 8-9 days here, I just can't see a sell-off. You know, I can see standing pat. It's just not Dave Dombrowski's style. I mean, he did it that last year in Detroit. Next thing you knew, he was out as the GM. He's got one more year left of that contract. He has not been given an extension yet either. I just can't see him giving up on, even this year, but let alone 2020. He's one of the few GMs in the game that are aggressive, and I think that's why it's such a slow trade deadline. All these GMs just hang on to their prospects. You know, they get contract extensions. Very few guys are like him and F.A. Epstein, where you actually just go for the gusto, trade these prospects, and try to get a World Series.
Yeah, and listen, I see that side of it. I mean, Dave Dombrowski, again, next year's his last year of his deal. Is he going to go in the last year of his deal? You know, with no contract? I don't know. Does he want to sit here and sort of sell in a season in which he thinks he has enough talent, a talented team that won the World Series last year? So I understand that part of it. And in a way, I actually trust Dave Dombrowski with the people he trades away. You know, I mean, Moncada is a very good player, but you got Chris Sale, you got to give up something, right? But I feel like the guys he's given up and then people are screaming about when it happened a couple years back, I don't know. I don't know if any of these guys are going to be any good. So I will be interested in this whole thing, see what he does. Because I'm sure he wants to build for this team. You know, his ownership sitting saying, nope, we got eyes in the future. Is that telling Dave Dombrowski that they don't have eyes on him? So I think it's kind of an interesting dynamic here in the next week, 10 days.
Yeah, and just to kind of take a look back, since the original theme of the season based on Cora was like, we're not starting over again. We're just turning the page, just looking at it. So
turn the page.
See, July 23rd, 2018, the Red Sox were 40 games over .500.
Yeah.
40 games.
Not bad.
Yeah, because I'm sitting there going, okay, when was the last time? So last night, you would think that would be an opportunity for a textbook ass whooping. You get seven innings, you go eight, you go nine. But it wasn't.
No.
It was dangerous. Mm-hmm. It was nerve-wracking. And you still, and I said, oh, here we go again. So you get seven innings. You can't just go eight, nine and be done. To me, that's saving arms. That's saving energy. That's just, I mean, building on the momentum that is success. Because you almost feel like you got to, like you stole one. You feel like you stole one even though you beat their heads in. Like they had no answers for you. You just kept hitting it all over the place. Eovaldi gave up three runs and two in the third. You got one back because they brought back an infielder to pitch the ninth. They basically just gave up. Any other team is fighting to the end. If they thought, if that was a little bit closer of a game, maybe if, you know, a grand slam away from tying it up, they don't bring in an infielder to pitch the ninth. They don't.
No, no, and it should have been a lot easier last night than it was. They continued, actually. Buster Olney had this, a lot of talks about Mookie Betts. And this is what Olney and Nightingale had to say about that situation.
There's a lot of speculation in the Boston media that, you know, heck, it's not out of the realm of possibility that Mookie Betts gets traded before the deadline. If the Red Sox turns out, Bob, I think there's no chance of that happening. Because, as you know, teams talk about how it's so much easier to deal position players during the offseason. Big, you know, big name guys who have a lot of value during the offseason because you can involve, you know, a lot more teams versus during the season when teams have much more specific needs. And it would seem like it would be, have to be such a complex, big deal that I just can't see them putting together something for Mookie Betts.
Yeah, I'm with you on, I mean, a Mookie Betts. There's no way in the world I see them trading Mookie Betts. Now, I think Mookie will test the free agent market in a couple of years. I don't see him signing a long-term extension unless you're talking, you know, Mike Trout type money. But I certainly don't see them pushing him or turning him out the door.
See, I'm more with Buster on this one. You know, I never said they must trade Mookie Betts. I said there's a scenario where they would think about it. Or I think there's a scenario where they would take calls on it. I do think this offseason, yeah, I think it's serious. Nightingale seems to think there's no way in hell it'll ever happen in the offseason. I disagree with that. But it sounds like Buster even admits that even in the offseason, it's easy to deal a guy like that. More teams involved. And I would agree with him. I mean, I think it's happened in the offseason. Deadline, they go, what, 1-8? 2-7? All right, they already won one game. So we'll see what happens. All right, listen, Tommy Curran, he's going to join us next. He wrote an article talking about the Tom Brady contract situation. We'll get into Brady and some Patriots with our good old friend, Tommy Curran, next.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
OMF. We return to more of Ordway, Marloney, and Fourier on Sports Radio WEEI.
Do you think about the contract, or is that something that just works out and always has?
Yeah, I don't think about it too much, so...
Would you prefer not to be in a walk here with the when the year starts, or does it matter to you?
I think those things work themselves out. So,
have there been negotiations, Tom?
That's none of your business.
Hey, Tom, could you talk about?
I never really talked about my contract or anything like that. So, mm-hmm. I don't really want to start doing that now.
That was Tom Brady back in June talking about his contract situation. We were
all important OTAs.
Yeah, we were reading earlier from Tommy Curran's piece on NBC Sports Boston. Patriots are overcomplicating Tom Brady's contract. And with that, our good friend Tommy Curran joins us from NBC Sports Boston. Tom, what is going on here with Tom Brady? Is the Patriots going year to year, do you believe? Will he play this year basically on his final year of his contract?
I think that the chance of that happening is remote, but also I don't think there's a cohesive plan in place right now. That's a perception that I'm getting that says, okay, we're about to push this thing over the finish line, and Tom Brady is not going to play snaps in possibly the most violent sport in the NFL with the risk of injury hanging over him. Right now, until progress is made, and the progress is that they're at least talking, which they weren't doing in May or March or January around the Super Bowl, at least they're talking. But my feeling is the Patriots continue to slow play this contract. And the reason is it's confusing for them to get their brains around a 42-year-old quarterback and how much they want to pay him. And not to go on too long, but I have a tendency to do that. This reminds me of 2017 when they didn't want to part with Jimmy Garoppolo prior to the season in case Brady either got hurt or showed signs of slippage. So there's continued reticence about them putting something in front of Brady that commits the Patriots.
So I do think that the Patriots want to get some sort of control back so that situation, like you mentioned, in 2017 doesn't happen. But what do you think a sticking point could be in this negotiation process? So what do you think it is it could be for the Patriots, and what could you think it would be for Tom?
That's a good question, Christian. I think the sticking point for the Patriots is length of term. You know, can they just add one more year and they have him at, you know, the $27 million cap hit, which they could reduce, but they have him at this year's salary, and then next year still doesn't drop him that much. So do you have to go to 3 years, which means Tom Brady, after his 44th birthday, plays a season of professional football for you? And look, I get it in a vacuum, clinically looking at it, where Bill Belichick would say, I'm not ready to commit to Tom Brady with the $30 million or $32 million it might take to sew him up through his 44th birthday. So that would be, to me, the greatest sticking point. Robert Kraft is said that I'm good to go. We're going to make sure this happens. Tom Brady has shown nothing but great willingness to want to stay here. So where does that leave us in terms of who's reticent? It leaves us with the football side of things. And that's where I think it gets sticky. Robert Kraft doesn't want to impose himself, nor Jonathan Kraft, on Bill Belichick and his football decision-making. He got raked over the coals when it was even perceived that he did that with Jimmy Garoppolo. So is there a point at which ownership feels as if it wants or needs to step in to make this happen? And then if that does happen, how does that shape up between ownership and head coach?
Yeah, so I get their point of view. I get the Patriots' position. But I look at Brady's position, because I feel like at this point in time, his age is irrelevant. It doesn't matter. Whether he's 43 or 44, for the next 2 years, he's going to be, if not the best quarterback in the NFL, top five quarterback. So he should be paid accordingly. And if I'm Tom, I'm thinking that's the way we're going to go about this. So unless we're talking about, you know, Kirk Cousins type money, Aaron Rodgers type money, when we get Russell Wilson, we get into the 30s, we are not, I'm just going to play out my contract and we'll figure it out when the season's over.
And that's a great point. I mean, the Patriots have not surrounded Tom Brady with unbelievable weaponry, neither last year nor this year.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, you gave him a $5 million contract, incentive-laden deal last year, and said, why don't you go hit these? Well, he had no friggin' chance. The guys that he was throwing, he's handing off to Cordero Patterson. He started the season, and I understand that Edelman was suspended, but he started the season with Chris Hogan and Philip Dorsett at his wide receiver positions. He had no shot to hit the incentives laid in front of him. So as it continues to drag out, I wonder how much interest he has in playing ball for that hometown discount. And I've always felt it was inevitable, Christian. I've always felt that it would happen, Lou, that it gets done. But as it continues to creep forward, the chance that he does go into the season and plays it out is not unheard of. It's remote. But I would have thought that it was completely unheard of. And until they get something going, you have to keep that on the table.
You know, it's funny you say that, Tom, because we didn't even discuss the chance of injury for Tom Brady. It hasn't even crossed right. our mind of an athlete going to a final year of his deal, playing this sport, and thinking there's injury concerned, right? You want to have some stability because of maybe just the way he's been able to stay healthy, right? So that's just something we haven't even thought of, just because it's credit to Tom. But, I mean, if you're the Patriots, you're thinking about it. If you're Bill Belichick, I don't know, maybe Robert Kraft has different ideas, but Bill's thinking year to year. Hey, if he drops off, maybe we move on. You know, maybe we don't franchise tag him if that's how we want to play ball, right? Oh, by the way, right. Jimmy Garoppolo might be let go next year after San Fran. Huh.
Look, Bill Belichick had the balls to do it with Bernie Kosar, and he was right. He had the balls to do it with Drew Bledsoe, and he was right. There's nothing to say that he might not be eventually right in playing it year to year with Tom Brady and playing it with clinical, unsentimental, unnostalgic, you know, manners. But that, to me, puts the owner in a very interesting position. I mean, in 2014, when the perception was, or 2015 more accurately, when the perception was that Robert Kraft left Tom Brady out to fight on his own, I don't think that went over real well for Robert Kraft in the way that he was presented and the way he didn't expect it to come out. And I think if this continues in this vein, it's going to be uncomfortable for Robert Kraft to watch, because he has stated how important he is. Look, the guy's gone to the last three Super Bowls. They've won two. He did everything he possibly could in his own power to win the other one. Yet all the hugs and caresses and parades, nowhere in there is the kid rewarded with a contract that allows him to finally breathe a sigh of relief. And you've been trying to replace him since 2014. At some point, Brady himself, as much as he carries out the soundbite that you guys played and doesn't talk about it and keeps it out of his mind, there is a point at which he says, what the hell? What are we doing?
Hey, I was talking to Tom E. Kern for NBC Sports Boston. See, I think that there is some, I wouldn't call it contention, but there are some sticking points. And in the past, each side has probably compromised a little bit for the betterment of the team. But I also believe that Brady still remembers how every other star before him was treated. So why can't there be some sort of... See, I think Brady should do a baseball contract or demand a similar deal that Drew Brees had. Okay, yes. So it's a two-year deal. It's $50 million. But Brady's contract, I would ask, if I'm Brady, a three-year deal for about $85 to $90 million. But I would take two in 60, 65, but there would be some sort of opt-out clause because that way each side could be happy. Brady would get his money, and then the Pats would have some sort of option to bail out if they felt like his play had diminished. And then he'd be a free agent again.
Yeah, and that to me is where the headline to the story. Patriots are overcomplicating Brady contract.
Yeah.
That ain't hard. I mean, you laid that out.
I know. But you got CTE.
Hey, Tom, speaking of Brady, Fourier kind of putting that all together, you know, when Brady always talks about, I have all the answers to the test, it's funny because you might have some answers to this too, right? I mean, his agent, Don Yee, is in a weird spot. All right. His agent, not Fourier, but Don Yee, the real guy. You got to believe there was some conversations about how the Patriots feel about moving forward with Jimmy Garoppolo. And I mean, how unique is that situation? He's talking about a guy possibly, you know, taking over for Tom Brady. It's his other client. Now that Garoppolo's gone, like, that whole dynamic to me is so interesting. That, like, there's a guy, yeah, Don Yee, that knows all the information about what could have been the guy that took over for him, but now his client's still there, and now he wants to move forward, but he knows that they're a little bit nervous because of his age.
I agree, and I talked to Yee, I talked to Garoppolo, I talked to Brady prior to the 2017 season when we were at the Super Bowl, just about that whole dynamic. And to me, it ended up being a huge advantage for both Garoppolo and Brady, because the Patriots never really even put together a proposition for Jimmy Garoppolo that they slid across the table and said, do you want to take this? They knew it was a non-starter. It's much, again, in the same vein as it is right now. They didn't have a plan because it was unprecedented to have a 42-year or a 40-year-old quarterback at that time who was playing at the level that Brady did. So it never got to that point then, and the Patriots ended up taking a second-round pick because, you know, they had him as insurance. They weren't able to do it, so they shepherded him into a good situation. But Brady was able to know, and Garoppolo was able to know, what the Patriots were inclined to do with their replacement or their predecessor. So I think that it ended up, ironically enough, working out really well for both of them.
You know, so we were talking, Lou and I were talking yesterday, because Ben Volen wrote an article about, like, the intrigue with this offseason. and we both kind of just knocked it down.
More intrigued than usual.
More intrigued than usual. And based on the moves and the players and the guys they have coming back, and there's no real off-field issues, it seems pretty – it's for the Patriots, it seems like a pretty ho-hum, normal offseason.
Compared to last year, Tom, if you remember everything that went on, this is nothing.
You're 100% right. Well, the year before that. I mean, we had – it started in 13, and then, you know, it, honest to God, it started in 12. That's the Welker, Amendola year. And then 13, of course, Aaron Hernandez, 14, you know, a little bit off. Then 15, you know, you have Deflategate, 16, Deflategate continued, 17. Can't remember what the hell, but, oh, Gronk coming back and that getting sideways. And then, yeah, so it's been – an onslaught. So now when you have the general manager, the director of pro personnel, courted by another team, threats of tampering charges, a withdrawal of the offer, and that person coming back, and you have the turnover of about six coaches with a defensive coordinator potentially deciding he didn't want to be the defensive coordinator, you look at this as, well, this is not bad, but it is. There's a little bit of tumult that has gone on as well, but that's status quo.
All right, Tom, real quick, last one. What do you think gets done? Does Tom Brady play in his final year of his contract, or does he get something done before the season starts?
Get something done before the season starts.
All right.
Two out of three are interested in getting it done.
All right. All right, Tommy. Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston. Appreciate the time, buddy. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Tom.
You know, real quick, the Don Yee thing is really fascinating. You know, I mentioned, I think, so the 49ers, this is Garoppolo's walk year.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just saying, nothing else is guaranteed after this year. Think about the situation that he was in. You know, Belichick trades his client, Jimmy Garoppolo, to San Fran. He knows he adores him. You know, is there ever a, hey, you know, you never know. We could see each other again someday.
No, that's the Ordway take.
Okay, so yeah,
that's the Ordway take.
But I'm just
take.
Saying, so here's this guy stuck in the middle of it, and there's no contract extension from Brady. In the back of his mind, he's like, you know what? I think Bill's still in love with my other client, who might be out in San Fran after this year. So, you know, I'm connecting dots, and it's like they don't want to put in a long-term deal in front of my other client, Tom Brady, because I actually think he's still in love with Jimmy Garoppolo, who might be gone after this year in San Fran. You know, so Don Yee's stuck in this, like, in the middle of having all the answers or having a lot more information than many most would with two different clients, you know, that were on the same team. They're now on different teams, and he's trying to work out a contract for one, maybe thinking that they might have their eye on the other guy.
Yeah, with that in mind, so Tom said, like, what's the sticking point? So for the Patriots, it's years. So he's got 1 year left on his contract. Do you give him a 1 year extension and you load him up with cash for that 1 year so he maybe retroactively catches up to a Kirk Cousins or Russell Wilson or Aaron Rodgers? You just pile it on for the next 2 years, 1 year extension, and you hook it up where he ends up making more, and then you protect yourself. Because I understand their fear with not wanting to go deep into years because they want to retain that control. He could get hurt. Someone could fall on his knee.
Isn't that amazing that we never even talked about, you know, when an athlete's on his final year of his deal, one of the first things you talk about is no athlete wants to do that. Fear of injury. Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah. Right?
Nobody wants to do that because they're afraid that you could have tore ACL. You don't want to do that going in your free agent year. We never even brought that up with Tom. Like earlier when we were talking about this. Because he's just healthy.
Well, yeah, because yeah, other...
You don't even think about that with Tom.
Other than
he's thinking I might
weird,
get hurt.
Yeah, the weird, you know, somebody falling on you. But he protects himself. So to me, that's part of his... you know, of the plus for him is that he protects himself from injury. Regardless of how the other guy, Garoppolo, a lot of guys don't know how to fall. They don't know how to avoid the contact. Do me a favor, grab a number one for me real quick because I'm interested to see, hear the logic in this.
Oh, all right, what's our boy, Albert from Rhode Island. Yeah. All right, Albert, go ahead.
How's it going, guys? Christian, before I get to my point, quick question. You fully believe that Tom Brady will play out as a top five quarterback the next 2 years, saying that he plays? You believe that?
2 years?
Yeah.
Yes, I do. Okay. Yeah. And then what's your point? Listen, I'm giving you a chance. Make your point or I'm going to hang up on you. Dude, you're such a dope. You know what? All right. Goodbye.
You were talking to Tom.
Hang up on him.
Why?
You don't know? No, because, like, listen, I'm doing him a favor. I'm giving him an opportunity, and he, like, diverts from the topic. You have a topic, ask the question, or shut the hell up. Yeah, this guy. I'm serious. I'm like, dude, like, can you ever be normal? Can you ever not be a complete ass clown? Like, we give you opportunity after opportunity. Like, just ask the question. You had an interesting topic.
He's trying to set it
up. No, he isn't. He's being a dope. You had an interesting topic. I was intrigued by it. I was like, listen, we're going to go to break. No, I'm going to divert for this knucklehead so he can just be an ass clown again. I just can't take it anymore.
I don't like Albert for Rhode Island.
It's not that. It's just, listen, I'm willing to play along, but we're on up against the break.
We are.
Ask the question. Give it up for debate. Don't call again. Next week, I want you to call between 6 and 10. Introduce yourself to Greg Hill. Do that. Introduce yourself to Greg.
Oh, Greg will love him.
And then say, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Very interesting. Yeah, he'll love him. All right, listen, we got the final hour of OMF coming up right after this. We just talked to Tommy Curran. One of the last things he said I want to touch on, I think it's very interesting. You'll hear that again next.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.